Hi, my name is Emily Hinckley, and I attended Sanborn Regional High School in Kingston, New Hampshire. I was introduced to Lead 'Em Up through our varsity basketball program when Adam Bradley paid us a visit during my junior and senior years. Lead 'Em Up allowed me to change my mindset and become a better leader on the court, in the classroom, and in the real world through all of the games and team-building exercises that Adam taught us during our sessions. I was also given the opportunity to start a green team club at my school, which allowed me to become more green myself, while also educating my peers on how to make the Sanborn community more positive and more green. I currently am a freshman at Husson University in Bangor, Maine, and I still use the lessons that the Lead 'Em Up program taught me to succeed and to always stay in the green.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A. Thank you for hanging with us today. I'm Adam Bradley, joined by Kyle Elmendorf, our Southeast Regional coach for Lead 'Em Up. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that I've been spending a lot of time recently talking with our players and with our teams to really make sure they understand that there are levels to this topic of relationships on a team. And that sometimes we engage in relationships and we try to build connections and try to build that camaraderie on the team. And we need to understand the levels because we may think we're at a certain point that's at a healthy place. We may think we're in a position that's going to drive accountability and drive performance. But unless we know the levels and have a clear understanding of these levels, we may not get to the level we need to. We may end up landing at a place thinking that's where we should be, thinking we're in a good place and not striving to get to a level that is at a higher place simply because you were not aware that it was needed. And specifically, as I've been talking to the teams, Kyle, been building around this theme of, do you care about your teammates or are you more interested in being cool with your teammates? Now, obviously, that being the language that we share as we're communicating with our athletes, but it's a concept between care versus cool. And I believe, Kyle, when you begin to dig in and really spend significant amount of time around athletes, younger athletes, let's say the 14 to 22 age range of sorts, and maybe even beyond that, you know, if you explored it, there is a large number of athletes, a large number, that if you really dug in, you begin to see that they actually don't care about their teammates that much. When put against the scale, they actually are more concerned with just being cool with them than actually caring. And what happens, Kyle, is you see it where, let's say they try to hold them accountable or, you know, hold them to a standard or push them or coach them or drive them. They will do it only up to a certain point. And the moment they sense that there's a little bit of resistance, a little bit of discomfort, or heaven forbid, a little bit of dislike, right? Like they're starting to get annoyed. I say, you don't want to annoy them, obviously, but like the moment they feel a little bit of that pushback, they stop because they don't want to jeopardize what is most important to them, which is simply being cool with them, accepted by them, friends with them, right? Included with them. And they feel if they go a little bit too far, they will jeopardize that. And they don't want to jeopardize that, even if it means they will allow that person to go down a path that's going to be dangerous, that's going to be detrimental to them. They will allow it as long as it doesn't jeopardize the social standing of being cool with them. Kyle, you've been coaching for many, many years. Is this an assessment that you also see in your teams and through your experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great call out on your point there. It's so challenging at that time period in a young person's life where I think, you know, intrinsically and internally, that desire to be liked and to feel like you are accepted by others is so overwhelming at times that when you are presented with an opportunity to challenge or to push someone, that you do tend to kind of pause. And I know when I think back to my own self at that age, there were probably times where I did that as well, where you could have challenged the behavior of someone or given them a little bit of advice or feedback on how to be better, but it was just more comfortable to kind of go with the status quo. And you're right, it probably could have led to myself being better, teammates being better, and the team as a byproduct being better, but just going with the flow or keeping the status quo or not ruffling feathers in order to be accepted or liked, that's a hard thing for people in that age group to sometimes kind of overcome.
When you talked about you and, you know, in your past, and when I think back to my past, you know, I graduated in 2000 from high school, 2005 in college. And first off, there was zero leadership development that I experienced at any point in my high school career, which is really interesting now that we do this and this is what we do for a living. I mean, I've had that conversation many times. This wasn't even on the radar in late 90s, early 2000s, this intentional leadership development. And I think for better or for worse, there's been an increased desire and increased demand for success in sports now, right? Like the need to win is greater than it's ever been. The need to be successful is greater than it's ever been. Kids, you know, are striving to get scholarships more than they ever have in their life. Okay. Like there's this need, this new enhanced and elevated standard and pressure. Once again, for better or for worse, it is what it is. In many ways, this is where we are. So for me, if there's so much talk about success, if there's so much talk about winning, if there's so much talk about getting to that next level, which is such a dominant part of our conversation in today's sports. I mean, you think about year-round sports now, right? Like, I mean, it's to be special. It's not just like, it's not just a trivial hobby for most anymore, maybe for some, but you know, this is a pivotal part of their life. It is essential. It is a component that's going to drive them where they want to go professionally in college and things like that. So when you start changing the conversations to that level around sports, as has happened over the last 10 years, then you need to, then what happens is the leadership begins to change, because I'm going to lead someone very differently if the goal is to win and be successful and be our best versus someone that just wants to have fun and enjoy the social environment. Okay. Those are going to be very different conversations. So if we're in this place now where we want to win, where we want to be successful, some of the teams that we work with, they're, I mean, championship or bust, right? It's like this mentality. Well, in those mentalities, we have to have that conversation is what's it going to take for us to get there? Well, it's going to require us to move past this place of simply just being focused on being cool with each other and actually demonstrating that we care, being willing to be more focused on a future thank you, on a future respect, on a future recognition of appreciation from that other person versus the moment, right? Because in the moment here, if my only concern is just making you happy in the moment, you're right, I'm not going to push you. You're right, I am going to let you do what you want to do. But if my concern can be, I care about you so much that I'm willing to risk you being upset in the moment because I'm more concerned with the future, this is a mindset we've got to start incorporating into our players if the goal really is to win and be successful and be a champion. And I don't think this is a conversation many of the players have thought, because I think they think, if I can just stay cool, well, that's good, because don't we want to get along? Don't we want a team that's like friends? And yes, that's part of it, but this is where that art comes, that line, and where is that line drawn? That's the challenge.
Yeah, and a lot of times the tricky part too there with that is sometimes it's easy when you're in that mindset of, well, on this team, maybe we're not at that level. I don't need to push this individual. I'm still going to be maybe moving on to that next level. But, you know, we also have to realize that and, you know, help players understand that when you challenge and you push people to make them better, the team becomes better. And then you as an individual will reap the benefits down the road. It can't all be just about me getting my bag or me getting my offer or me getting my stat line. Like when you help other people achieve at a high level, that's when it's going to come back to you tenfold. It can't just be all about that in the moment. So, you know, a lot of the times too, one of the things you bring up is just how you kind of phrased it in a way. It reminds me of good parenting in a way. And this kind of equates to like being a good teammate. A good parent's not going to give someone what they want in the moment. If my son wants to eat a candy bar at 10 o'clock at night and he's complaining about that, I'm not just going to let him do it just so he likes me as a dad and says, oh, dad's cool, he lets me have a candy bar then, right? The same thing applies to any good friendship. Is if you really are a good friend or you're a good teammate, you're going to help that person get to where they need to go, even if it causes you to be misunderstood. I think that's where people really need to move past, is that point of being misunderstood and be willing to be misunderstood if you know your intention is pure.
And it's interesting because we're speaking about if you care for your teammates versus cool, but the other thing is you just have to care in general. Like not just care for the person, you have to actually just care in general. Like, and you know, we talk a lot about green, gray, and red in the green team. Like if you're gray, you're not going to not only not care for that person at that level, you're just not even going to care enough about the situation as a whole, right? You're going to have a general level of apathy to most things. But when we get into that place of that green behavior, which is going to be driving us forward, which is going to be producing success, enhancing the environment, all those different things, all those that are driven into green, that's where our players have to shift from like, okay, now that we've entered into this space, we're now entering into a space where like the sole focus can't be to be cool with each other. Okay. It is absolutely to care for them, which sometimes may mean you have to say things or hold them accountable to things that they don't want to hear. Right. And now the art is can you do that in a way that can still remain friends? Right. Cause right. Obviously there is a level of importance. That's why we teach sugar and salt, right? Cause there's moments where, you know, even if you need to deliver salt, you need to do it in the most appropriate way and recognize the timing and the frequency and your relationship and all these dynamics that we teach. But that's where you've got to get to. You absolutely got to get to. You nailed the parenting, because I think that's the great illustration there. Okay. But you also brought up a great point about players also recognizing that this is going to drive everything forward when we get to this place of caring for another one. And I call it the minimize, maximize effect, right? When you care for your team and you actually do the things to push them and drive them forward, and when the team succeeds, it maximizes your individual attributes and contributions, okay? So it's interesting. When I care about the team, you get maximized in return, right? Because when the team wins well, I always joke, even the 10th man on the NBA team gets a ring when they win it all. Okay. So that person will forever be introduced as a champion. Why? Because when the team does well, your individual performance gets elevated. You could average half of your potential numbers, right? Whatever your potential numbers are, you could average half of it. But if your team wins, they'll look at you and say, yeah, but he or she's a winner. Yeah. He or she, yeah, their numbers were down, but yeah, they did what they needed to do. That's them being a great teammate, great champion. Whereas on the flip side, when you only care about yourself, right, or your numbers first, right, and the team doesn't do well, your individual contributions get minimized, right? You could put up incredible numbers, but if your team loses, you still get looked upon as someone who didn't do enough or someone who doesn't know how to lead their team to a champion. Yeah, that person's good, but only because they lost. Anybody can put up numbers on a losing team. You hear all these phrases, right? When the team thrives, you shine brighter. When the team diminishes, your shine dulls. So for us, recognizing that, okay, then my focus needs to be team being driven first. Well, how does my team get driven first? When I effectively can push and encourage and hold accountable those teammates that I play alongside to help get them to another level.
Right.
That's the goal.
There's such a dichotomy there when you're talking about those different levels of leadership. And one of the things that jumped out to my mind when you first brought this topic up is I'm sure most people remember The Last Dance when that came out, and Michael Jordan, but you recall with the time where he's talking about, because there's this little part of the series where Bill Winnington and Will Perdue are kind of talking about how Jordan was on him, dogging him. And to your point, Bill Winnington is not remembered as one of the greatest players in NBA history, but he won championships. He's an NBA champion. He combined with Michael Jordan, me and my buddy used to always joke that Bill Winnington can walk into a room and say, one night, me and Jordan combined for 57 points at the Garden. Bill only got two on a dunk.
Yeah,
he can say that. But Michael said, one of the quotes that rung true to me for this episode topic was that he said, so I pulled people along when they didn't want to be pulled. And I challenged people when they didn't want to be challenged. But they didn't know that that's what it was going to take. Now, we can argue that, you know, how he did that and the manner he did that. And then it kind of brought me to Mia Hamm. She was, I think in 2012, she was voted the top female athlete in the past 40 years of sport. And she's kind of renowned as one of the best leaders, not only in just women's sports, but in sports in general. And she talked about that very topic in an interview I looked up on the idea of care. She said, if you really care, you're going to compete. And one of the lines that stuck out to me in her interview was that if a teammate is not trying to make you better, I'm going to have a talk with her. And I'm going to ask them if they really care. So it does go back to that point, is if you're trying to get better, you should care about your teammates. And sometimes that means you don't have to be cool with them in order to care. Sometimes caring means that you're going to challenge and you're going to push, even if they don't want to be challenged or pushed.
And you can't be so concerned in the moment. You really can't. No. Like, you've got to be willing to sacrifice a little bit of discomfort in the moment for future, you know, future success and future progress. And, you know, there's a song I listen to and it has a line that says, faithful are the wounds from a friend. Faithful are the wounds from a friend. Right? Like, if I've got someone who really cares about me and they may say things that hurt a little bit in the moment, I'm going to trust that they're faithful, that they're looking out for my best interest, that they're there to like help guide me and protect me and move me in a better direction and get me better. Like, and I will trust that those little bit of moments of pain, that they're faithful, that they're good and filled with good intentions for me. And now, obviously, this is tough conversation for a 16, 17, 18-year-old, okay? But this is why I think it's important that we start having this conversation. We start celebrating moments where we see people demonstrating a care and a care that even overrode a cool in a moment, okay?
Right.
And bring that to attention and let them see, okay? It's why it's also important that we teach that concept of followership. So when people do step out to try to show that they care, that it's not met with such heavy resistance that would end up discouraging someone. Because I think that's a large part of this also.
Right.
I think there's people that want to care for their teammates. But the problem is every time they do care or they care too much, the other teammate doesn't respond well or gets defensive or tells them, like, stay out of my business. So then they say, you know what? I'm gonna pull back a little bit. It's easier just to try to be cool with them and not overstep it.
So yeah, that's a great call out.
You have to want that, right? And you know, we always say if you aren't appreciative of others' leadership on you, and if you're not appreciative of others having your back in those moments, i.e. caring, you will eventually get to the point where nobody cares for you. And I know that sounds harsh, but think about what you just done. Every time someone tried to care for you, you didn't allow it. You fought back and pushed back. Naturally, people are going to step away. They're going to say, it's not worth it. I'm not going to keep trying to help Kyle, right? You know, I don't know what the study is. I read this one time that like, it's something like 4 or 5 invitations. Like, if you're trying to build a friendship with someone and you invite them out, I think it's after the 4th or 5th time of an invitation that you don't accept, they're done inviting you.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, right? Like, if I'm trying to engage with you and have you, you know, hang out and I send you an invite and you, oh, dude, I can't make it. And then I said, no, I can't make it. Oh, no, not today. Can't make it. probably am going to stop at some point. Okay.
It's not like, worth the time.
Not worth the time. I'm like, okay, I'll wait for that person to maybe engage me next time. And I think they said 4 or 5 invitations is when people stop. That's the same thing in many ways about this. Like, if I step out to try to care for you and you don't respond well, I may try another time. I may try a third time maybe, but at some point I'm going to stop. So what's the point? So we have to also be coaching this environment. If we're going to get our players to move beyond just being cool and move to a place of care, we got to coach this environment that begins celebrating these moments where we begin positioning it to our players and say, look, hey, did y'all notice how so-and-so had your back? Where the players in that moment may be processing that call out as like them overstepping or them trying to do too much, you know, or rubbing them the wrong way. But imagine what it would look like when the coach oversteps the situation, says, hey, let me interject real quick. Hey, y'all see what Kyle just tried to do? Kyle, hey, appreciate you having your guys back. Guys, he cares about you. Y'all see that? You may be mad at that. He cares, right? Because he doesn't want to see you cry after the 7th game when we lose like you did last year because you were so frustrated. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want that pain to happen to you again. Embrace it. It's like it's going to require a very intentional effort by coaches to move to this.
Hello, this is Kevin Williams from Chick-fil-A and author of Irrational Kindness. And this is today's Leadership Nugget. You don't have to try and create the perfect life to have an amazing story. Simply start with a solid direction you want to head, followed by hundreds of course corrections as you march on your journey. One way that helps me do this is to bookend my days. This helps guide me, reading at the end of the day something positive that fills my mind with the thoughts that give rest and reflection. It can be a short devotion or article that rests the soul. In the morning, begin by journaling and creating some space to reflect. Margin to imagine the day. Write those down. It will help keep crafting your destination, those important course corrections, or simply the next sprint race as you write your story. Bring patience, persistence, and courage to allow this space and permission for discovery. Now, let's jump back to the episode.
When you see stories, a lot of times, Kyle, where the stories almost break your heart sometimes when we don't get this right. And I think this is a conversation we can share with our players to really get them to understand the consequence of not caring for teammates, right? I think about a situation this past year, NFL story, Henry Ruggs, the Raiders wide receiver. If you're familiar and pay attention to sports closely, you know, he went out drinking, jumped in his car, ends up hitting a individual as he was driving about 4 a.m. Ends up, I mean, I don't know what the sentence will be, but it's not going to be good, right? Like years and years and years, decades upon decades in jail, most likely. This young man drinking and driving, hitting another person, killing them. His life's changed. And as you read more about that story and how, you know, heartbreaking it is, just the whole situation, you get amazed in many ways, as well as just kind of concerned. He was out that night, Kyle, with a large group of family and friends from different reports that you read. And one could argue, how can somebody be around a big group of people that supposedly care about you, yet allow you to step into a decision that is so detrimental potentially and life-changing in that way? And you begin to think, like, if you had to be there, and this is me speculating, okay, just based on my own situations of being in these settings, right, where let's say it goes like this, like, hey, all right, I'm out of here. I'm headed home. Hey, now you shouldn't be driving. You go to try to take the guy's keys. No, you shouldn't be driving. Drive an Uber. Take an Uber. No, I'm good. I'm good, man. I'm good. Nah, man, don't drive. No, I'm good. All of a sudden, after like 2 attempts, you kind of just pull back. I've seen this firsthand 100 times in my life, right? Well, what happens there? It's essentially, you get to the point where they're not going to keep pushing. because at some point the social standing that they have with you is in jeopardy, and they don't want to risk that. And maybe in a situation with, you know, Henry Ruggs, once again, speculating, but assuming, because you've seen these type of situations play out so many times where, you know, who knows? I mean, Henry Ruggs is their NFL friend, right? Who knows? He may have picked up the tab because he, you know, he's the professional in the group, right? He's got the contract and such. All of a sudden, yeah, you can't, hey, don't drive, man. But all of a sudden he pushes. You don't want to disrupt that. You don't want to do anything to jeopardize being cool with him in that situation. So you just let him go. And I bet there's a handful of people that have now looked back in that situation, in that moment that was with him, and have now just been living in a life full of regret that I should have done more. I should have done more. I could have prevented that. I could have helped that situation not have happened. Those moments, yes, you're right. You could have done more. Yes, you could have helped prevent it, but it won't happen if you choose to just stay cool. If you're not willing to overstep and be strong in your stance of caring for that person. Because guess what? You would have got a thank you the next day, right? You would have got a thank you the next day from the player, right? Man, yo, I know I was angry at you last night, man, but hey, appreciate it. Good looking out. Thanks for caring about me.
Yeah.
But, you know, so like these moments, like these stories have to be shared because our players need to really be challenged and understand that, you know, when teammates hold them accountable or call them out and care for them, it's not an attack. It's a sign of kindness and care.
Yeah. I mean, it's the word lifeguarding, which we use obviously to kind of teach accountability. And I think for coaches listening to this, you ask, you know, questions, well, how do you get our young people to understand this? How do you get them to buy into this concept? And I think one of the good things is always a way that you can put it back into their laps where the athletes have to take ownership of it. And so for me, one of the things I try to really emphasize with players and coaches is that when we teach what it means to be green and that we're all working for that, when we break down those standards, those aren't coach led. Like those aren't created by the coach. The players are the ones that are identifying it. And then, you can start having the conversation of, well, if you all were really intentional and you really care about this team showing up special, achieving its ceiling and all of that, then you have to lifeguard each other to those standards. You have to be able to that. If someone's in over their head and they're walking out in the water and they can't swim, you better believe you should tell them to get back in here or pull them back in. Mm-hmm. Same applies to any aspect. And so I think that's where we can really use like the intentional language and the themes of exercises that teach this, rather than just saying, you know, sometimes, hey, if you care about someone, you're going to say something. Well, what's a way that we can do that? And I think like through our coaches and our community, we know that language with lifeguarding and standards and being green, we can put the onus on the players to where they can maybe realize, well, they're not being too harsh. They're actually just showing that they care about me and what we're trying to build if they're calling me out.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, great call out there. The language is so critical and it's so important that we keep emphasizing that. Once again, going back to what I was sharing a few moments ago, that we have moments where someone does show care over cool, that you celebrate that and you bring it to everyone's attention and you specifically address those that got addressed by that other person and say, man, did you thank so-and-so? Why would I thank him? He cares for you. He cares for you. He called you out for being 5 minutes late. And they'll be like, why would I thank him for calling me out for being 5 minutes late? Because he cares about you. Because he wants you to be good. He wants you to be a winner.
More concerned with the person that doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Like, so these are things, like there's no quick fixes to these things. It's about bringing it to their attention, causing them, having them take moments to evaluate where is their relationship with their team. Coaches, we just recorded recently, and it's up in your coach's membership. There's a player resource video on this topic called Cool Versus Care. It is shareable. It's less than 5 minutes. Share it with your players. Have them start thinking about this. Have them start processing, like, you know, where are my relationships with my teammates? Am I guilty of just being cool with them, or do I actually care for them? right? Like have that, start talking about this and engaging in that, you know, as we wrap up here, one of my favorite stories, Kyle, of this cool versus care came from Julius Randle within the last year. Yeah. And he was sharing a story about his rookie year in LA. Obviously he gets drafted to LA. Kobe's on that team. Julius Randle, he grew up in Dallas, and Julius Randle said, as forget the magazine that he was sharing the story, it may even have been a podcast episode, I forget. But he said early on after he got drafted, you know, he had talked to Kobe a couple of times about how he couldn't wait to go back to Dallas. And that first game back at Dallas, playing in front of his home crowd, his family, his friends, how important it was for him to play well. That was like a huge focus. And it was one of those dates that he had like circled on the calendar that we often talk about. And Julius shares a story that they were playing in Dallas on a Saturday. The plane flew in on a Friday evening. They got to their hotel or whatever Friday, we'll say around 7 or 8. And Julius had plans that night to go out with friends and family, go grab dinner, and then probably go out a little bit because they didn't play again until the following night, Saturday night at 7 o'clock tip off, or maybe 8 o'clock tip off. So enough time for him to go out and kind of do his thing and you know, not have to wake up super early the next day. Well, Kobe overhears Julius talking to some of the other teammates about the plans and that, you know, hey, I'm going to go meet up some friends and this and that. And so they get off the bus at the hotel, and Kobe immediately goes over to an assistant coach and asks the coach, can you reserve a high school gym for us? I need to go work out, Friday night workout. Coach goes, starts pulling some strings, you know, probably gets a gym of sorts. And Kobe goes to Julius and says, hey, rookie, hey, I need you to work out with me tonight. I got a gym over wherever. Come over with me. Let's go. Let's work out. And Julius is like hesitant at first. He's like, oh, Kobe, you know, like, man, I got plans, right? I'm in town. My family, friends, we're going to go out, grab dinner, this and that. And Kobe, I'd have to imagine, and this is me adding a detail into the story. I'd have to imagine Kobe just gave him that Kobe look. Right. That kind of like that Mamba Stern, like,
right.
Like, I don't care about your family plans right now. Like you're playing, you're practicing. So Julius basically just said, like, he was like, yeah, Kobe said, nah, man, you're practicing with me. And you know, I'm a rookie. Like, I'm not going to turn down Kobe if he says you're coming with me. Okay.
Crazy.
You're crazy to do that. Exactly. So he goes and he works out with Kobe and ends up not going out, cancels all his plans to not go out. Saturday comes, game time comes, ends up having his best game in his rookie season to date. In front of his family, in front of his fans, in front of his friends, and ended up, through this game, they end up getting the win, played great. He essentially got what he wanted. In the beginning, he said he wanted to ball out in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he wanted. You see, when you move to a place, and if we can get our players to understand this, we will be moving closer to winning. When we move from a place of being cool with our teammates to getting them to a place where they care, two things happen. One, you actually get them closer to what they claim they want.
Mm-hmm.
You move them closer to being in the place that they have communicated they desire to be. Oh, and by the way, it usually comes back to help you also. Right. That's the second thing. But in this particular story, Kobe knew what Julius really wanted. And Julius didn't get drafted by the LA, and he didn't circle the Friday night on his calendar. He circled the Saturday night. The Friday night going out with family and friends, although cool, was not what he ultimately wanted. It's not what he had communicated in advance. Man, I can't wait to go to Dallas. I can't wait to show out, play my best game. No, no, no. When Kobe stepped in that moment, he knew in the moment he was going to get some pushback. He knew in the moment Julius probably wouldn't be super thrilled with him, but he was willing to risk the moment for the future appreciation, respect, and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, you look 8 years later, Julius is telling this story. See, when we move to a place where we care for our teammates It leaves lasting impressions in our teammates' minds that will stay with them for years. It will change their mindset. It will transform their approach, and it will help get them closer to what they want. So coaches, here's a great way to tee it up. Acknowledge that if you went around the room and asked each player, do they want to have a great season? Do they want to win? Do they want to build something special? All of which, to my guess, would be yes, yes, and yes.
Sure.
They would say that. They would echo and share those sentiments. Well, the reality is, when you step in and you push them or you challenge them or you hold them accountable, you're simply just helping them get what they want. And I am okay letting someone be mad at me for the moment if I can help get them what they want in the future.
Right.
That's the trade-off. Our players need to hear this message because we as teammates, we as friends are failing each other. Far too often, letting our friends, letting our teammates go down paths that lead to destruction, go down paths that lead to bad decisions, go down paths that lead them into bad habits and unhealthiness time and time again, because we're not courageous enough or willing enough to demonstrate that we really care for them. So we stay in this kind of just this comfort zone of wanting to be cool. And I tell you, people are losing because of it.
It really just boils down to selfless versus selfish. If you're selfless, you're not concerned about how you're going to be perceived and if people like you. So you're going to give them the feedback that's going to help them achieve their goal. If you're selfish, you're more concerned with your perception and how people like you. So you're just going to tell them what they want to hear or not tell them what they don't want to hear so they like you and you're cool. I mean, really, it just kind of boils down to that. Are we selfless or are we selfish? And when we get past that, then that's when we can move the needle for the team, teammates, and everyone involved.
Man, I'll be honest. I was just in a social setting this weekend, okay? And this happened. We were talking about there's a mutual individual that we all knew and that we all know who many of us, and I'm trying to be very careful here, right, on how I word this, many of us don't agree with his parenting, okay? Mm-hmm. We don't love a handful of different things in his parenting approach, and it's kind of clear that even his kids may not like some of the things in his parenting approach. There's some unhealthiness. I'll just put it like that, right?
Right.
And he's a younger parent. You know, I'd say probably 8 or 9 years younger than myself and the majority of our group. And we were talking about it, and we were talking about not in a gossipy way, but just like really in an unfortunate, you know, like, you know, just, and it led us to a point where, you know, I kind of shared that this individual desperately could benefit from some mentors pouring into his life. Okay. Just helping him coach him up on how to parent, maybe getting him to reassess some things, maybe getting him to kind of maybe view things in a slightly different perspective. Mm-hmm. And everybody agreed. Everybody was like, oh yeah, no, definitely. He definitely. So I threw it back to the group. I said, now, are any of y'all willing to do that? Literally, I threw it back. Yeah. We all know him.
And
I look back, we all agreed he needs some mentors in his life. And I looked at him, I said, are any of y'all willing to do that? And no joke, here was the exact response, right? The exact response almost collectively amongst the three other individuals. I don't know.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's, yeah, I don't know if that's really my place. A bunch of squirming in their chairs, right? A bunch of responses like that.
I can see it.
And, you know, in the moment, no one threw it back at me. And if they did, you know, how would I have answered? I would have answered, you know, probably not in this moment. Am I ready to do that? But I do feel really convicted that I want to. and I may start working to build a relationship to get there. Right. I probably would answer something like that. Cause I do feel now convicted in light of that conversation that I want to, that I am guilty of just being cool with them, but I also don't know them. That's why the relationship's so important, but it speaks to the fact that like, we all have just up until this point in many ways, just been living in a place that we're just comfortable being cool with them. And that we see some things that are unhealthy and we haven't got to that place of caring for him enough. And maybe because the relationship's not there, but it all kind of builds together, right? So why we need the relationships grown. So we care enough about people. But it was a really interesting observation because it kind of showed right there in front of me, just three individuals just acknowledging, nah, I'm going to keep it cool. I'm going to sit here.
That's universal. Yeah.
It's universal.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I think that happens everywhere. It's easier to go that route for sure.
And I don't want to live that life. I don't. I want to get to a place where I'm willing to like have these tough conversations. Now, you also need to have the emotional intelligence to know when. You've got to have the relationship at a certain point. I mean, so there's dynamics involved. You can't just go do it all the time. But it can help start driving intentionality when you start thinking like, I want to care for these people. I don't want to just be someone who's just, yeah, do whatever you want to do. Yeah, just keep going. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, keep going. Keep doing your thing. When I just don't want that. And I hope our players, you know, can kind of hear some of this message and they start living with a little bit more intentionality to not allow that either. So, you know, I hope today's conversation gave you some language, cool versus care, kind of, you know, challenge your mindset a little bit about, you know, how you're approaching this conversation with your players. Hopefully this teed up an opportunity for you to have that conversation with your players about where are your relationships with each other? Where are we? And I'm afraid we're in a place that we're just living in this cool place. And I'm concerned because can that get us where we want to go? Hopefully this can unpack that. As I mentioned earlier, there's a player resource video in your new coaches membership, the upgraded portal. It's less than 5 minutes. You can share it with your players, allow them to hear a quick lesson designed for players to help engage them and give them some things to think about. But Kyle, appreciate your insight on this. Coaches, we appreciate you listening. Appreciate you hanging out. Until next time, have fun and lead them up. We want to take a moment and thank our friends over at Chick-fil-A for partnering with us on the Lead 'Em Up podcast. Chick-fil-A is mostly well known for their incredible original chicken sandwich and those amazing waffle potato fries. But what people might not understand is there is a lot more going on behind the counter. You see, every Chick-fil-A is individually owned and operated by someone who deeply cares for their community and for their team. So next time you get an urge to go buy a Chick-fil-A, remember, it is more than just a chicken sandwich. We are thankful to Chick-fil-A and thankful for you for listening. So until next time, have fun and lead them up.